Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we're continuing our vault episodes for this week. On Tuesday, we ran The Invention of the Spoon, Part 1. Now, here's Part 2. This episode originally aired March 11th, 2021. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're back continuing the Spoon Challenge. This is part two of our talk about spoons. If you haven't listened to part one from Tuesday of this week, you should go back and do that one first. But yeah, we're here to shove more spoons in your brain.
Yeah, we have quite a lot of cool stuff in this one as well. We got more stuff on ancient Chinese spoons. We have some Chinese poetry. We've got vampires. We've got spoon magic, a little spoon pop culture. Yeah, loads of fun. So let's dive right in.
Sure. So in the last episode, we talked about the spoon as an invention, a way that we might not usually think about such a simple household object. And we talked about some of the archaeological research on the earliest spoons, like how artifacts that could be interpreted as spoons show up in rare and isolated instances back into the Paleolithic, but that after the Neolithic Revolution, when a settled existence based on farming becomes common, spoons start to proliferate in the archaeological record, and that there are some I think very clear reasons for that. For one thing, we talked about a paper from 2019 by Stefanovich et al. Arguing that many of these Neolithic bone spoons were probably used for feeding babies, and that as such, they might well reflect a broader historical change in the options available for the care and feeding of young children when you had things like animal milk and cereal grains that had emerged as foodstuffs from again, that Neolithic agricultural revolution. So you'd have a sort of new regime of societies based on gruel and spoon tech. And then, of course, we talked about the spoons of ancient Egypt and China. And I guess I wanted to pick up today with the subject of ancient spoons in China. And so one source I looked to here was a book called Fermentations in Food Science. This is by Xingsung Huang, published by Cambridge University Press in the year 2000. This is part of a series on science and civilization in China, edited by Joseph Needham. I think we've referred to some of the books in the series before.
Yes, his name rings a bell for sure.
And so the first passage about spoons in this book comes in the context of a question about the known practice of ancient Chinese cooking that would be the parching of cooked grain. And this is this was a food tradition that wouldn't have been limited to ancient China. A number of cultures would serve parched grains of a certain kind. This would basically just mean like cooking the water content out of a grain that had already been cooked, perhaps by boiling or something. And so in this context, Huang writes that, quote, since the ancient Chinese did not have ovens, one way to parch the grain would be to stir it in a heated pot. This stirring was probably done with a spoon or ladle called pi. The earliest reference to this instrument is found in the Shi Qing, which states, quote, messy is the stew in the pot, bent is the thornwood spoon. Now, a note on that source, the Shi Qing is also known as the classic of poetry or sometimes the book of odes. It has a number of names. I don't know which one you're most familiar with, Rob, but I'm sure you've come across this work before. It's one of the earliest, perhaps the earliest surviving collection of Chinese poetry. It's roughly 2,500 to 3,000 years old. I believe traditionally said to have been compiled by Confucius, but I think modern scholars dispute that authorship claim. But anyway, I got really curious about this line because I didn't understand what this meant. Messy is the stew in the pot, bent is the thornwood spoon. I was like, what does that mean? So I went looking for the source to see the context, and this led me down an interesting rabbit trail. I hope you're willing to go on a digression about ancient Chinese poetry with me.
Oh, always.
So I found another translation. This is an English translation by William Jennings that appears to have been a very common early translation, and I'm sure some stuff is getting lost because it has some amount of meter and rhyme in English, which I would assume means that a good bit is getting sort of reshaped meaning-wise across the languages. But it'll hopefully be at least close enough to get the gist of the poem. And so if I have identified the right poem here, this line is from a poem that in translation is called The Neglected Eastern States. And the poem seems to be spoken by a court official living in the East who is apparently lamenting that once he had it great and he lived a life of luxury, but now he is in the East, he's in the Eastern States, and he has really hit the skids. Times are tough in the Eastern States. Like one of the quatrains here is, here in the East, the sons of nobles for service hard remain unpaid. There in the West, the sons of nobles are in most gorgeous garb delayed. So the thing being set up here in the East, times are tough. In the West, things are, or at least used to be, really nice. And yeah. So,
and if he were back in the West, he would have it nice. But instead, he's here living tough.
Right. And so this line about the spoon in the William Jennings translation here, I think it goes like this. Once supped we from well-laden trenchers and thornwood spoons bent to the loads. So if I'm interpreting that right, I think the idea is once, like, our stew was so rich and so awesome that it literally bent the spoons that we were trying to use to stir and eat it.
Oh, wow. Just so loaded down with deliciousness that the spoons are breaking off left and right. Okay.
I've never heard a comparison like that before, but that's pretty good. I mean,
it seems like the kind of thing that you would have seen in like American advertisements for like chunky soups, you know? Because maybe we're getting a little out of it now, but it seems like for a long time that was like the staple, like chunky style soups and advertisements for really just almost solid soups that it looks like you would lose some spoons in.
This was the real soup currency of the 90s, I remember. Like Campbell's would really emphasize in their ads back then, this is no thin, watery broth anymore. This is soup that is so thick you could like lay mortar with it.
Yeah. 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 It was actually, I guess, a little a little bit of like a cultural shock to me when I first started having more broth-based soups mm-hmm. at some point in my life, you know, and realized, oh, well, you know, that there's a rich tradition of soups and they all over the world, and they don't all have to be this thick, you know?
They don't have to be like 40% cornstarch by weight.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever broke... Well, you know, I think I have broken spoons off in takeout fare before, you know?
Oh,
I can't
yeah.
specifically remember it, but, you know, you get like a cheap spoon and you have like kind of a thick, potato salad or something like that. Mm-hmm. You try and spoon it out, you may lose a spoon in there. It's true.
This raises a question I've never considered before, but in the creation of disposable utensils, I guess you have a choice. So you're making a cheap plastic spoon. Do you go more towards it bends when it reaches its stress limit, or do you go more towards it snaps and breaks when it reaches its stress limit?
I feel like I've had some plastic spoons that managed to do both. Like it was both flimsy and brittle. In a way, it was a miracle of material sciences. Like how did it fail in all categories?
It might as well be spun sugar or something.
Yeah.
But okay, anyway, back to this this poem from the Xi Jing. In the end, there was one thing I thought that was pretty interesting in this poem, which is that the speaker starts looking to the constellations up in the sky, but picks up again on the utensil imagery from the beginning of the poem, but referring to the constellations. So the last part of the poem goes like this. There in the south, the sieve is shining, yet not for sifting was it made. There in the north appears the ladle, yet ne'er a liquor will it laid. Though southward there the sieve be shining, here points its tongue beyond the rest. Though northward there appear the ladle, it hoists its handle in the west. Now, I really don't know exactly what to make of that, but it struck me as very curious. I wondered if you had thoughts on that, obviously, I guess there are some constellations in the sky that are regularly compared to household items, particularly kitchen items. I mean, the Big Dipper being right. a ladle of sorts.
Yeah. I mean, that's where my mind goes, not knowing anything about the origin of this or any interpretations of it. It seems like just a beautiful way of saying, hey, there's a big spoon in the sky, but you can't eat with it. It's
right.
just for looking at.
Well, also the idea that so even the ladle in the stars hoist its handle in the west. It's almost like, that is only for people of the western states to reach and ladle their sky stew with.
Huh.
Though I don't know, maybe I'm reading that wrong.
Even the stars conspire against me and prevent me from having luxurious soups and fine robes.
This really is an epic complainer poem.
Well, you didn't have Yelp reviews back then. This was how you had to go about it.
So anyway, I don't know. Maybe we'll have to come back and maybe get some context on this poem in the future.
But for now, back to the spoon. It's all about
the spoon. Right. Yeah, back to what Huang had to say about the P here, and that's written P-I in English. But Huang writes that the P came in various sizes and shapes and were used as both cooking and serving utensils. The Li Qi records a P used in rituals and presumably also in entertaining that was 3 to 5 feet long.
Oh, wow.
That sounds too long to be practical. It's like for show almost, right?
Yeah. I mean, you do find various serving performances and cultures around the world, so it makes sense. You know, get out a ridiculously long ladle here and have somebody who has practiced it, its use enough that they're not going to make a huge mess.
Yeah, exactly. Going on with Huang, it also mentions a different but equally long P, which is a two-pronged fork. It was so named because its shape is similar to that of the constellation P, now identified as Epsilon Tauri. So this is interesting again, because this comes back to comparing the kitchen utensils to constellations in the poem.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Now, I don't know if this repeated association between constellations and cooking utensils is just a total coincidence based on what I happen to be reading here, or if there's something significant about that. But anyway, reading further in Fermentations and Food Science, Huang goes on to say later that ancient Chinese texts speak, of course, of this long spoon, pi, which is an instrument to stir food while it's being cooked in a pot. But there's also apparently a small pi, which Huang writes, quote, would be the equivalent of the modern spoon, which is used universally for conveying soup from a container, a cauldron or bowl, into one's mouth. But then you've also got this other thing that's a type of ladle called a shuo. And this is for distributing liquid like broth or wine from a large pot into a smaller bowl. Now, Huang goes on to catalog different types of spoons that appear in different periods in Chinese history, made out of different materials, different average lengths and stuff like that. One of the interesting ideas raised, and I think this connects to some things we've already talked about, was that early bronze spoons in ancient China appear to have had a sharp point, and this may have been used to cut meat. So I could imagine maybe if you have I don't know exactly that this would be the use case, but if you had, say, chunks of meat floating around in a soup or a stew, you could use the spoon to lift the soup or the stew into the mouth, but also maybe like press a piece of meat against the side of the bowl and cut it with the sharp point.
Yeah, this is interesting, though. It does raise the question, like, why would it be necessary to sharpen it? Because, as we all know, using metal spoons in our life, we can cut with the spoon, even if it's not sharpened. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly apply some pressure and use it, certainly on things like stewed meat, stewed vegetables, you know, things that are not too tough. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess the idea of the spoon being sharpened in some way makes me feel a little nervous, a little anxious, you know.
Yeah.
Like I can just imagine things going wrong. I don't want any sharpened spoons in my life.
Well, your logic there may have been the one that won out in historical spoon design in ancient China, because Huang also says that the spoons tend to start taking a rounder form in the spring and autumn period. And then by the time of the Warring States period, you've got these like lacquered wooden spoons that start to become the dominant format.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see it being a trend for a little bit and then people backing away from it. Like, essentially there could have been a campaign, right? Are you tired of this happening to you? And, and imagine like the ad of somebody trying to cut meat with their spoon and it's just not working.
They cut their tongue off. Yeah.
Well, that would be the follow-up, right? Are you tired of cutting your tongue off with your sharpened spoon? But before that, it would be like, are you tired of having chunks of meat that just cannot be cut in half with your spoon? Try the sharpened spoon.
Blood's running down your chin. There's got to be a better way.
we'll come back to, very briefly, a spin on this in a bit.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
I guess one thing that we're trying to drive home in these examples is that something like the spoon, an invention like the spoon, has, as everyday as it is, you know, it is so close to our lives that we often forget about it. But it's also so close to our lives that it is susceptible to cultural pressure and various design trends. So even though the spoon, you might think, well, the spoon never changes. But of course, the spoon does change. And I ran across a wonderful example of this, an interesting tidbit from the history of spoons as related by B. Wilson in What Your Spoon Says About You from the Atlantic. And it concerns one small corner of the world during a particular stretch of time, England in the 17th century.
Okay, so this would have been the time during and after the English Civil War.
Right. So, yeah, at this point, I'll set the setting here, the monarchy had been disposed of and Oliver Cromwell had risen to power. Now, the resulting Commonwealth rule didn't last very long. Cromwell ruled from 1653 until his death in 1658, and at that point, it pretty much collapsed under his son's leadership the following year. So that's not really a long time to bust out a lot of spoons under your rule, but there are some interesting changes that took place. So before Cromwell rose to power, you saw a lot of these silver, proper British spoons that had fig-shaped bowls and Wilson describes as chunky hexagonal stems. They also describe it as having a bowl like a teardrop, quote, widening toward the end that you put in your mouth. They tended to have decorative knops at the top. Knops were artistic flourishes that often featured things like humanoid forms, ladies, animals, that sort of thing. But then, again, Cromwell comes to power, and under Cromwell's strict Puritan regime, this sort of spoon was no longer favored all of a sudden. So you see the rise of Puritan spoons, which were, quote, simple, shallow, egg-shaped spoons with flat stems and no decoration, no knops.
And you could generally see this as part of, like, the Puritan impulse against representative art, right?
Right, yeah. Now, B. Wilson has a wonderful little passage. I want to read this. They write, quote, none of these decorative spoons found favor during the Commonwealth. When excessive decoration of any kind, particularly religious, was disapproved of, the round heads lopped the heads off spoons just as they lopped off the king's head. It's a nice comparison there.
That would be referring to Charles I, who was yes. beheaded at the after losing the English Civil War.
So anyway, these Puritan spoons, suddenly they are the trend. But they were not only plain, they were also hefty. They were big hunks of silver. And it's thought that this was a way for people to hoard their silver. Mm-hmm. That way, when the local government came calling, which they apparently would do, and say, hey, we need all your extra silver to pay for the town's defense. Well, you can say, ooh, the only silver I have are these silver utensils, and I need those to eat. I'm going to hang on to these. So it was a way of having essential use silver in your house. Just making sure that all of your silver was a part of your eating utensils.
Now, this is very interesting because it makes me wonder if this is antecedent to or like somehow connected to this tradition I never really understood, but was still around in American families when I was growing up, that like as a wedding present, people would be given an expensive set of silver, like the family silver, you know, special dining ware. But as far as I understood it, this was never to be used. It was just like the most expensive stuff that you have in your house. So you just keep it in a drawer.
Yeah, you keep it stuck away and maybe you get it out to polish it and care for it. And occasionally maybe you eat with it, but certainly not all the time. Now, again, the Commonwealth fell eventually, and then came the Restoration. And as Charles II returns from exile, he brings with him a new spoon style. And as Wilson points out, the shift here was sudden. The Triffid spoon takes over, a deep oval bowl spoon with a flat handle and a distinctive cleft shape at the end.
Hmm.
Wilson writes, quote, "No British person had ever eaten from such a spoon before in Britain. The first Triffids are hallmarked 1660. Yet by 1680, they had spread through the entirety of Charles's kingdom and remained the dominant spoon type for 40 years, killing off both the Puritan spoon and the fig-shaped spoons that went before." And their designs, apparently, you know, it wasn't just about how they hold soup and gruel in this case. You know, it's also about how you hold the spoon. I think we touched on this before. Like, the way a spoon is designed not only has an influence on how you eat, it also influences how you're going to interact with the spoon with your hand, how you're going to hold it. So the Triffid here could be held regally in a polite, you know, thoroughly English way. So that also appears to be part of it. You know, it's like there's a new rule. There are new... you know, a restored rule. There are new, you know, new ideas. We're going kind of going against the Puritan concepts of how we should interact with our food. And so the Triffid here is in fashion, and it's going to have an influence on the way we consume our soup or what have you.
I didn't think to look this up ahead of time, but I realize now there's got to be a John Dryden poem about Triffid spoons. Doesn't that just seem perfect?
Yeah, I mean, especially if it was, you know, this big of a deal, a sweeping change.
Oh, well, a quick Google search does not reveal anything.
Hmm. All right, the next spoon I'd like to talk about is something from Mesoamerican history. So here's the thing. Spoons can, of course, be decorative, and we find an interesting decorative spoon in the ritual spoon pendants of the Olmec peoples. This was the earliest known major Mesoamerican civilization. And if you visit the Met in New York City, you may be able to see one of these. I know they have them in their collection, made from somewhere between the 10th and 4th century BCE. I included a picture here for you to look at, Joe, so you can see what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. If you look one up and you didn't know what you're looking at, you might be forgiven for not recognizing this as a spoon.
No, so it's got a spoon-like depression in it, but if you were to flip it on its side, it almost looks kind of like a submarine. It's like a long cigar shape, and then it's got a big bulge, sort of cylindrical bulge in one section.
Yeah. I see it often described as a T-shaped pendant, but it also looks to me like a P, like a big P with an extra stem on top. Mm-hmm. And there is a bowl area, but it's rather shallow. So in particular with the Olmec spoon pendants, these jade T-shaped pendants are thought to have been used for ceremonial hallucinogenic consumption. Mm. And similar T-shaped pendants from the later Maya culture apparently signified the sacred breath. I was looking around for more information on these, and I ran across a November 2020 paper from Andrew D. Turner, published in Ancient Mesoamerica. And the author here discusses an interesting possibility, and that is that these spoons with what to our eyes look like a strange shape, they might be based off the basic shape of the iridescent shells of wing oysters. And if you look up a wing oyster, they do have this kind of P shape. So again, going back to what we talked about in the first episode about the idea of shells being something that ancient peoples would have used as spoons before the creation of spoons, and then in the creation of spoons, you know, affixing a shell to a stick, that sort of thing. Isn't it interesting that we potentially see an example here of then actual invented spoons, actual artifacts mimicking directly the natural shape of this shell that is no longer being used?
Well, if there was a long-running tradition of using natural, you know, nature facts, objects found in nature, like the shells of oysters as spoons, before you had a manufactory of artificial spoons, I can imagine that a spoon used in a specific religious or ritual context might be the one that you would most want to keep like the old school spoon, you know, because when we get into the religious or ritual mindset, we're often trying to recreate scenes of the past or our imagination of scenes of the past.
Yeah, I think so. And then, of course, throw into that as well the idea of the instrument or the invention becoming a symbol and just becoming, because that's also what we see going on here potentially with these pendants, is even if they're no longer being used to consume a particular substance, they become symbolic of that magical ritual or some sort of idea caught up in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Now, from here, this raises a question for me. I was thinking, well, okay, now we've talked about spoons and their interaction with sacred affairs and political affairs, but how about mythology and folklore? Well, given the place that the spoon holds in human lives back through ancient times, it shouldn't be surprising that it does occasionally become imbued with mythic and magical properties. For starters, the figure of the witch or any kind of magical female presence is often associated with household items that take on magical properties. So the broom is a prime example of this in various tales of witches. We have the Baba Yaga's mortar and pestle that she uses to fly through the sky. So you better believe there are some magical spoons out there as well, and I have just a few examples of these.
Oh, boy.
So according to Spoon, Woman, and Soul, the folk belief in Japanese spoon by Wang, published in the Journal of Dalian University, the spoon may take on magical associations in Japanese folk belief associated with, quote, mountains, females, souls with a supernatural magical power of birth, praying for peace, being healthy, and exorcism, etc. I was also reading an article by Gabby Thompson of Volgemuth about East German translations of fairy tales. And this was fascinating. This is kind of a tangent, but it's worth it. The author points out that early East German versions of the Brothers Grimm's fairy tales, they'd been very popular during the Third Reich, so great care was taken in translating them anew so as to stress values considered important and remove those, again, for East German readers that they deemed, quote, harmful to a socialist education and hence modified. Hmm. So here's an example. In the original Grimm's tales ending of Rumpelstiltskin, the bested imp becomes so irate that he stomps his foot down so hard that his entire leg becomes stuck in the ground. And then he's even more enraged. He pushes down with both hands to free himself from the earth, and in doing so, rips his body in half.
Okay.
So just a really gory, just Mortal Kombat type ending to Rumpelstiltskin.
Uh-huh.
But this would not do in the early East German translations, and they cite a couple of them. I think it's Politschek and Kosolek. And it ends up having this very, I think, kind of a poochy ending to reference The Simpsons. Instead of having Rumpelstiltskin stomping and ripping his body in half, instead, quote, "And he flew out of the window on a wooden spoon." And then that's the end. Yep.
Is that the first mention of the wooden spoon?
I know, I'm not sure on that, but possibly, yes. They just throw it in there like, oh, yeah, by the way, he had a wooden spoon, and it's magic, and he flew away, and nobody was ripped in half by their own anger.
My home planet needs me.
Yeah.
Rumpelstiltskin died on the way back to his home planet.
And by the way, that's also the name of the paper, "And he flew out of the window on a wooden spoon." So if you want to look it up, look that up. It's worth it. It's a fascinating topic. There are other examples of sanitized endings, such as there's the tale of the two brothers, which in the Grimm's version ends with them burning a witch alive in a fire. But one of the sanitized versions ends with, quote, "The poison grew in her heart so much that she exploded." And in the other one, they hit her with a magic wand and just turned her to stone. So it's interesting how these edits take place. I mean, these are very much like the sanitized Nintendo fatalities that we've discussed on the show before. All right, but back to spoons. Okay, more magical spoons. Apparently in Albania, there is a mushroom known as the witch's spoon because it is said to grow where a witch vomits. Good to know.
Okay.
I'm guessing, I did not really research this any further. It was actually, the full paper was behind a paywall, so I wasn't able to get at it. But I'm guessing this is not a good mushroom. This is not a mushroom you want to eat.
What makes you think that?
I mean, if witches are vomiting it up, I don't think we want to go after it.
But witches are bad, so maybe what they vomit up is good.
Okay, maybe. But don't do it on our account. Let's see. There are various folk magic practices that involve the use of spoons. The spoon is basically some sort of a magical focus or something. I ran across a Macedonian practice in which slips of paper with writing on them are burnt over a person's body in the bowl of a spoon.
Mm.
Now, you might remember, any of you who are listening to our Weird House Cinema episodes, you might remember in our Santo, in the Treasure of Dracula episode, you might remember a book I brought up, Paul Barber's Vampires, Burial, and Death. And I was looking in that book again. I may have to get a physical copy of this because they cover a late 19th century Prussian practice against vampires that involved placing a bowl of cold water under the board on which a dead body is lying, and placing a multitude of tin spoons on top of the body in order to prevent the dead from returning to unnatural life. And Barber notes that the spoon tradition here is interesting because there are some other traditions from that region that call for sharp objects like knives or even thorns to be placed on top of the body to keep it from rising again. But in this case, it's just a bunch of tin spoons.
With elaborate arrangements like this and the sort of general physical recipes for magic, I mean, this is the kind of thing that always makes me wonder, where does this come from? Is this derived from a series of past observations or practices that have been estranged from their original context over time, or just accumulated more details over time? Or did somebody just like get a vision and make this up?
I don't know. I think the obvious case here is, of course, a body lays out there, it is potentially going to swell, and in doing so, or there's going to be some disturbance within as decomposition begins to take hold, that could cause spoons placed delicately on the body to fall from that body and clatter on the floor, thus alerting you that something is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But then who knows what other mystical attachments are involved there as well, you know, concerning metal and, you know, just all these various magical ideas that might be imbued in the just the idea of a spoon or the idea of a knife.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, you've also sent me a picture of the surface of Mars for this episode. I wonder,
yes,
what game are you at here?
Yes, this is a 2016 photo, and you listening out there, you can look it up as well. It was taken by NASA's Curiosity rover, and it shows a formation on the surface of Mars that does look like a spoon. You know, you look at it, and yeah, it looks like a spoon. For some reason, someone has disposed of a spoon on the surface of Mars, raising all sorts of questions.
I mean, I think the obvious reason would be there's nothing to eat on Mars.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you even going to use that for? I mean, unless you catch that rat the Curiosity rover also saw, and then you make a stew. But I don't know how you'd make a stew because it'd be hard to gather enough water. I guess you'd really have to, you know, get a lot of that frost out of the sand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the spoon would be for the face on Mars so that it can eat soup. So, yeah, the face on Mars is more popular and certainly attracts more conspiracy thinking. But the spoon is also impressive. But just like the face, this is just a trick of the shadows. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's a trick of the shadows on a ventifact. That's a rock shaped by wind. So basically, you have just this strange rock formation that is photographed in just such a way that the shadows make it look like a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
So look it up. It's amusing.
Okay, secondary use. Wait a minute. No, the spoon is to be placed on top of the face on Mars to make sure that the face doesn't move.
That's true. Maybe that is what that was the real purpose of this mission. Bring a spoon to Mars, place it atop the face so that we can keep tabs on it. All right. You know, we're reaching the end here, but I did want to touch base regarding some spoon pop culture notes here. I don't know if you've ever seen this, Joe, but there is a wonderful video, The Horribly Slow Murder with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon.
I have not seen it. I'm opening it now.
Well, it's long enough that you probably want to watch it later, but basically a person is pursued by someone with a spoon, and they are hitting them with the spoon, attempting to kill them, but it ends up taking a long time. It's an extremely inefficient weapon, and so it takes the murderer the entirety of both their lives to pull it off.
Okay, this looks very good. Chaotic Rampage American Pictures presents.
Yeah. So yeah, that's some fun viewing for later on. Now, just talk of killing somebody with a spoon, or certainly cutting out their heart with a spoon. This brings to mind Robin Hood's Prince of Thieves. You might remember the exchange between the guy of Gisborne and the Sheriff of Nottingham, in part because he had two tremendous actors there. You had Alan Rickman and Michael Wincott in those roles, respectively.
Mm-hmm. And the discussion is about why you would use a spoon to kill someone.
Yeah.
Michael Wincott's character does not quite understand that.
Yeah, he's like, a spoon? Why not an axe? And, of course, Alan Rickman's Sheriff of Nottingham says, because it's dull, you twit, it'll hurt more. Fun roles in that film. The bad guys were a lot of fun in that. Let's see. Worth noting that the Tick's battle cry was spoon. In the Dark Tower series, the Crimson King in his original mortal form kills himself by swallowing a sharpened spoon, which seems to be part of a magical transformation that allows him to become this immortal being with godlike powers. And of course, this raises the question, how about the spoon as an actual murder weapon? Are there any accounts of this? Well, there's a Bustle article about it by Sage Young, published in 2015, and at least a couple of cases of spoons as weapons and even murder weapons have emerged. In 2004, a man in the UK was acquitted of murder after he struck another man in the back of the head with a dessert spoon.
Oh, no.
And in 2014, a Florida man was executed. He'd been on death row, and one of his crimes was killing a prison guard with a sharpened spoon. I don't think that completely counts because this was not sharpened for culinary purposes, but it was, of course, sharpened in order to make a makeshift murder weapon, a makeshift knife.
Yeah.
But still, it goes to show that, yes, you can kill someone with a spoon. I don't know if you can cut their heart out, but it you can certainly end someone's life.
Now, Rob, a number of listeners over the years, I believe, have asked us to cover the spork, especially we got this request several times on Invention, and I don't think we ever took anyone up on it.
No, and, you know, honestly, I want to keep it that way. I think that
we should do our part to erase the spork from history. I think we should declare it forbidden technology that serves no purpose. Like, have you ever used a spork and or been forced to use a spork and said, this is great. Can I get some of these for my house? Can I get metal sporks that I can use? Like, it? No, nobody does that. I'm anti-spork.
Have you ever, did you ever have a pocket knife that had a spork in it?
I don't think I did. I never had one of those really thick Boy Scout knives with all the extra things in them.
So you've never used a metal spork. I would say a metal spork is more defensible than the plastic spork, which is barely distinct, which is, I mean, pretty much the same as a plastic spoon.
Yeah. We do have a couple of plastic implements that we sometimes refer to as spoon-a-forks, and it is a fork on one side, and one of the edge blades, one of the edge prongs of the fork, is basically a butter knife, and then on the other end you have a spoon. So that I like. Like, the spoon remains pure, and we can combine the fork and the knife into one implement, and we just have to switch back and forth.
I think that's called a spoorf.
A spoorf?
I've seen the word, at least.
Okay. Well, I'm marginally pro spoorf, but I'm still anti spork.
Well, maybe we should let the listeners go, and then we can further discuss the ethics of your holy war against the spork.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's some compelling arguments out there for sporks that I'm not aware of, but I frankly doubt it.
Somehow I feel that a plastic spork is the only utensil appropriate for the eating of the Texas specialty, the Frito pie, served in the Frito's bag, despite the fact that there's nothing in a Frito pie that requires the tines to pierce it.
that does sound plausible. I remember having those in as part of a school lunch at one point when I was a kid. Where they would just take the Frito bag and they would, yep. It's just like a lump of meat that they drop in there.
Yeah, nothing feels better in your hand than just like holding a bag with something warm inside it.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us to wrap this one up. We're going to go ahead and close the case on this fine assortment of spoons. We're going to take that case and we're going to store it away, and we're not going to get it out again until there's a special occasion. But in the meantime, if you have some thoughts on spoons, the invention of spoons, the use of spoons, we would really love to hear from you. Like, especially if it's something, you know, regional, something cultural, something that's important to you or your family that's been passed down, some tidbit about the history of spoons that we missed here. Your thoughts, even on sporks, we will entertain them. And also, in the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, core episodes published in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Usually we publish Artifact on Wednesdays, Listener Mail on Mondays, and Fridays we do Weird House Cinema episodes and a Vault episode, a rerun on the weekends.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents.
Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say free this week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.